Hi, I'm Simon Campbell.
And I'm Susie Starlight.
Welcome to the Supertone Show.
Thank you, Gary. Thank you, Marion. David Bowie and The Next Day, the title track from his 24th studio album, released in March 2013 on the ISO and Columbia record labels. Wow.
Well, we watched the video the other night of this again, because we're looking at the show, and because this show is about Twickenham. And it's about the Eel Pie Club,
yep.
Where we're going to be playing in
October, on October the 5th, 2023.
Right. There we go.
Ladies and gentlemen.
So, and this series of shows that we're doing is all about our tour and the places that we're visiting and the cities that we're visiting. But, of course, Twickenham is in Greater London. And to talk about the artists that have come from London, it'd be a bit of what do you call it? A facile, thing
exercise
to do. So anyway, what we're doing is focusing on the Eel Pie Club and people who've played there. But we're going to come back to that in a minute. Susie's going to talk about that. But I'm going to talk a little bit about this track and the album. And we love it. And that cryptic comment that you made at the beginning, thank you, because Gary Oldman features in the video, and he's absolutely brilliant, and the video is so chilling, it really is.
And Marion Cotillard with the Stigmata. Yeah. Like blood coming out of her.
Unbelievable video. Really, really good. You know, I'll talk about a complete whitewash of the Catholic Church and a complete, you know, what a... Well, anyway, it's something worth watching, if you want to see. Very menacing. It's great.
Yeah, but didn't he... He's very piercing as well. You could feel the anger bubbling in his boiling his blood, actually.
It was.
Anger.
It was. And we watched also Valentine's Day from that album. And that's a really chilling
That's really
video,
piercing yeah. as well.
But the album in total is absolutely fantastic. We love it. There's one thing about it, though. Every time I put a David Bowie album on through our studio monitors, because we're in the studio right now, I'm always disappointed with the sound of it. They never sound as good as you expect them to sound, these albums. Now Susie's looking at me. She's looking at me with
it. What's going on there?
And Visconti produced it and all that, but they never sound as good as you expect. I mean, I love the guitar on this. It's trashy. It's like, you know, difficult to play because I think David Bowie's playing guitar on it. Also, Tony Visconti's playing guitar on it. And David Torn's playing guitar on it. And it's quite, you know, interesting. And it's trashy and all that. But I do think that these earlier records sounded better.
Yeah.
And I think that this sort of lacks a bit of imagination, certainly. And I'm afraid to say so, Galen Dorsey's bass. It's not as good as the previous bass players he's had, really, you know, in my humble opinion. But anyway, so that's something about it there, and you're a bit surprised.
Well, so. I am, but you know what? I really value your opinion. So it's and it's an interesting concept, especially because you've got these professional studio monitors. Yeah. You can really, I mean, this is world class.
Yeah, so, that's right, ACC, isn't it?
And, so you know.
Yeah, so we
you can hear what it's really like. It's not a domestic kit.
But what I'm doing here, I'm comparing it with other stuff that we listen to, you know, and that's it. And it really is, you know, it doesn't just sound as good for my, you know, any amount of my appreciation.
And it was interesting as well with this. So with this, show, we're featuring Twickenham and the Eel Pie Island Hotel. And the Eel Pie Club. Now, they're two separate places, but they all represent a scene in Twickenham.
Mm.
And even though this sort of started around the 50s and 60s, I wanted to play the next day with David Bowie for his recent stuff. So the show will feature a range of bands that have either played at the Eel Pie Island Hotel or at the Eel Pie Club.
Mm.
So this is really, really fascinating. I've had such an adventure finding out about all this. So our UK tour, you know, especially when you go to somewhere and you have a little bit more understanding of the history, it makes it all that more meaningful.
Yeah.
So the Eel Pie Club is located upstairs at the Cabbage Patch on London Road in Twickenham. We're playing on the 5th of October.
Mm-hmm.
It was formed in 2000 by Gina Way, who booked us for the gig, Warren Walters and Tom Nolan, to preserve and continue the heritage of UK rhythm and blues, which started in the 1960s down the road at the Eel Pie Island Hotel.
Ah.
Now, it became a hot... This is a fantastic scene. It became a hot spot for thousands of youngsters in the 50s and 60s. It was feared by parents as a den of iniquity. And
great.
Forbidden to many, which only encouraged them across the Twickenham Thames to revel in newfound teenage abandon and lap up the revolutionary sounds provided by like-minded musicians. Now, Davy Jones... David Bowie
indeed.
Played at the Eel Pie Island Hotel before he became David Bowie. He changed his surname so as not to be confused with Davy Jones of the Monkees. And in 1964, he's on the bill as Davy Jones and the Manish Boys. And in his 1973 album, Pin-Ups, features some of his favourite tunes from that 64 to 70, 67 period. And his handwritten sleeve notes on the back cover name check Eel Pie Island as one of his chosen haunts of the time.
I'm in no hurry, I can take my time, oh man. Let's spend the night together. Now I need you more than ever. Let's spend the night together now.
Let's Spend the Night Together, written by Mick Jagger and Keith Richards. Of course, the Rolling Stones.
Rolling.
If we don't know who that is, then we're all in trouble if you listen to the show. Originally released as a double A-sided single together with Ruby Tuesday, great song, in January 1967 on the Decca record label in the UK and London label in the USA. Produced by the mighty Andrew Loog Oldham and recorded in December 1966 at the RCA Record Studio in Hollywood, California. Now, that is absolutely fascinating because after me rubbishing Tony Visconti, one of the world's greatest producers earlier on, I'm now going to unrubbish Andrew Loog Oldham, who actually, in fact, was a great producer. The only problem with this track is that Spotify have got it on here, and you know what it is? It's remastered in stereo, and I don't think it could possibly have been in stereo, but listening to it, all the drums are on the right, and all the rest of it's split between the two. It's very unusual you get that. So, but of course, the USA were a lot more advanced in recording techniques at that time, so it's quite possible.
They were, weren't they?
Indeed. Could have been in stereo. But I don't think that sounds suspiciously like me, like it's been re-fettled later into stereo. But, you know, when people talk about the Beatles and Rolling Stones and who's the best, there's a lot of people say the Rolling Stones are better, you know? And I've got to say, sometimes I agree, these are great songs. You know, when you look at what they did, Ruby Tuesday, and I mean, I love, is it 20,000 Light Years From Home, that, and Paint It Black. These are great songs, but also they were quite revolutionary in the sound. I know everybody talks about Sgt. Pepper and everything, but I think that what happened with the Stones in those early days, especially the original lineup, you know, with Brian Jones, and the Bill Wyman bass, it all sort of glued together in a very good way. And of course, the thing is with that lot, And, you know, because Mick Jagger was highly educated and a real, even though he liked to produce, you know, look as a rebel and a, you know, of course he was. But you get him in an interview and he's far more eloquent than the Beatles were.
I mean, he's slippery. Because he's so intelligent that he's got a great answer. Thing is, they it was a deliberate their style. At one point they were all smartly dressed.
Yeah.
But then the manager wanted to differentiate them from the Beatles, so that's when they did the opposite type of characters.
Yeah.
But really, it's the other way around, isn't it?
Yeah.
Anyway,
but Keith Richards, of course, is indeed a bad boy. You know, he's always been a bad boy, and it's amazing that he's still alive. I think he's preserved himself. He's like a smoke kipper, you know. He's with pharmaceuticals and cigarettes, you know. And anyway,
it's funny. The thing, though, really, what I've still keep having to relearn about the Rolling Stones is it's all come from the blues.
Oh yeah.
I mean, I know it might not be a fashionable genre these days in terms of widespread mainstream, but, I mean, this is how Mick Jagger and Keith Richards, they met in Dartford. They were classmates and childhood friends in the 50s.
Mm-hmm.
And the next time they saw each other, it's a bit Harry Potterish. They met up on platform 2 of Dartford Railway Station.
No.
Yeah, on the 17th of October in 61. And Mick was carrying a couple of LPs with him, and it had Chuck Berry and Muddy Waters. And then Keith Richards thought, oh, God, you got the same taste as me. And that's how the band started, from looking at his vinyl collection that he was carrying.
Well, there you go.
See? And that's just, it fascinates me. So what happened was then they sent a tape to Alexis Corner of the band Blues Incorporated, and then they met up with Alexis and met Charlie Watts, who was playing with him at Ealing Jazz Club. That's how it all started, you see. Wow. So talking about, so we've got this blues thing. The reason why the Rolling Stones are being featured in this show about the Eel Pie Club and Twickenham and the Eel Pie Island Hotel is that they played there. And they're actually a big part of the scene.
Yeah.
So let's talk about, we've got to start at the very beginning.
Let's start at the very beginning.
Exactly. Eel Pie Island Hotel was built in 1830. It began life as a luxurious three-story riverside resort. It contained the perfect ingredients for teenage rebellion, a ballroom, sprawling bar, and most importantly, a sprung dance floor.
Oh, yes.
See? Rumours swirled of raucous dance evenings throughout the 20s and 30s before the venue fell into decades of decay. And a chap called Michael Snapper bought the hotel in 1951. And 5 years later, Brian Rutland and the Grove Jazz Band heralded a huge revival of the island's popularity. And in 1962, they started a rock and twist night with a bill including Screaming Lord Sutch and Cliff Bennett and the Rebel Rousers. Wow. So the R&B bands marked a shift away from the trad jazz nature of the club. And this is a great little story. Story has it, one night, manager Arthur, great name, Arthur Chisnell, went in search of their missing clientele. They discovered the Rolling Stones packing them in nearby at the Railway Hotel in Richmond and immediately gave them a five-month Eel Pie residency in 1963, which coincided with the release of their debut single, Come On.
Wow.
So the hall and grounds were solid and there were queues over the bridge. The whole bloody island was overflowing.
That's fantastic. And you know, I mean, that is just so sensational, isn't it? But just going back to the track again.
Yes, darling.
And if you listen, round about, what time is it? 1 minute, 40 seconds on that track. Just rewind a little bit and listen to it. 1 minute, 40 seconds into the track. And you will hear some clicking like claves. That and it is two policemen's truncheons being knocked together. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Is that a truncheon in your pocket, or are you just pleased to see me?
For Your Love, from the debut studio album John Mayall and the Blues Breakers, also known as the Beano album. It was originally called John Mayall with Eric Clapton and written by Chicago blues guitarist Otis Rush in 1958. It was produced by Mike Vernon and released in 1966 by Decca Records in the UK and London Records in the USA, and pioneered a guitar-dominated blues rock sound.
This is the beginning and the end, because when you listen to this, actually it doesn't come much better.
No.
Because Clapton, he was just finding his feet on you know, his guitar playing, really. And after this, it was all the Clapton's God and all that sort of carry on. But it's a marvellous record. And Huey Flint on drums, McGinnis Flint, and then, of course, the blues band later on.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, John McVie, who went on to go into Fleetwood Mac later on. And, you know, with Peter Green, and then the later incarnation of Fleetwood Mac, which is just dissolved, I think. I don't think they're going to do it anymore after this. Anyway, any more touring. But it's a fantastic example, and the classic, really, of blues rock. And everybody goes back to these records, everybody, including the Americans. Because the Americans, you know, we re-exported the blues back to America, you know, with the British blues invasion in the 60s. And it is the standard.
What would you how would you describe the difference between, what is the British blues invasion then in terms of the style playing? What's the difference between the American blues?
Well, I think it's a lot about the attitude of the guitar players, because when you listen to the Americans, I mean, there are some notable exceptions, you know, Mike Bloomfield, for example, you know, he's a great blues guitar player, an American. But when you listen to what was happening in England then with Clapton, Jeff Beck, Jimmy Page, you know, and all the plethora of others, Alvin Lee, you know, came after, and you know, and of course, not forgetting you know, the Stones, you know, because Keith Richard, he actually single-handedly showed the Americans how to play rhythm guitar.
Yeah.
And that's the thing, you know, and I mean, Chuck Berry, you know, great, I mean, they took everything from Chuck Berry and then sent it back again, you know, which I think considerably irritated old Chuck, as you probably saw from those videos, you know, with Keith Richard. But Keith Richard, you know, the master of the rhythm guitar, absolutely no doubt. And those riffs, you know, like Brown Sugar and all that shit going on, I mean, it's unbelievable. And that is like an extension of this whole blues rock thing. But this really was the start. And John Mayall, you know, along with Alexis Corner, all those people, you know, they really took the blues. Because John Mayall's from Manchester. He was born in Manchester, wasn't
he? I think
he
was. He's not north, he only went down south.
That's right,
yeah.
He went down south. But, of course, Clapton, Peter Green, Jeff Beck and Page were all, you know, within 10 miles of each other in London.
It's like this holy square.
Oh, yeah. It's just incredible. And, you know, and when I listen to modern blues rock, you know, it all harks back to this. And but the broken sound of his guitar, and, you know, he was loud, he had that blues breaker amp, 2B12 Marshall thing going down, and it's just a classic, you know, a classic rock and roll sound. But if you just join the show now, you probably wonder why we're doing all these tracks. Well, they're all related to the Eel Pie Club, mm-hmm. which we're playing in October this year.
On the 5th.
The 5th, yeah.
Yeah.
So the Eel Pie Club, and we're trying to get bands, or getting bands that actually played at the Eel Pie Club, and one of them was John Mayall.
Indeed, yes, for the Blues Breakers, because they, the band formed in February 63, and do you know what I love about John Mayall as well, you know, is that he just had an ever-evolving lineup of musicians, that people in and out of the band learning their chops and then sort of moving on. So Eric Clapton joined in April 65, a few months after the release of their first album, because their first album was the first live album.
Ah.
Then they did the debut studio album, and so he had his guitar-led blues, because he'd left the Yardbirds, because he was a bit of a blues purist.
Yeah.
So that was a thing. So we've got the Eel Pie Club in Twickenham that we're playing at, but also just down the road was the Eel Pie Island Hotel. Mm. And so the story continues that Dave Brock of Hawkwind met Eric Clapton in Richmond. And the scene at the time, a load of people used to hang out in the L'Auberge coffee bar and before going over to Il Pie Island for the gigs.
Wow.
And that's where it all happened. And Brock said, there seemed to be something about crossing that small body of water by chain ferry at first, then by footbridge, that allowed people to leave their inhibitions on the mainland. Can you imagine a little island?
Well, Dave Brock, a very troublesome man indeed. You know, Hawkwind. I mean, those boys were real crazy shit. Anyway,
well, you know, my little island used to be down at Wilton Bridge, just outside of Ross and White, where I used to go with Ali in the canoes. Yeah. And you could get, we had a little island. I'd love to have had a little hotel there. We could have gone and played some, you know, listened to some gigs. That would have been great, but it wasn't big enough. But they would talk, Dave Brock, you know, and Eric Clapton, the story goes, they used to swim across with their clothes balanced on their heads to avoid paying the 2 pence it costs to use the footbridge. I think that's brilliant. In the summer, I hope. I don't know. I mean, it'd be far too cold in the winter. And he was saying as well, you know, what is it that attracted them there? And it was the freedom. There were bushes everywhere and people used to go off in the bushes with their girlfriends.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Mm. Ooh, well.
Down, released as a single in May 1966 as the follow-up to Shapes of Things, which was played on the show, well, a couple of years ago, I say. In July, it was included on the group's self-titled UK album, commonly known as Roger the Engineer, in the UK, and Over, Under, Sideways, Down, the USA, produced by Simon Napier-Bell, recorded at AdVision in London. And this, really, started a massive swathe, because the Yardbirds were so incredibly influential. And it's incredible that the focus all in this little area, you know?
Yeah.
Because the Yardbirds have every bugger in that band. They had Jeff Beck, which is playing on that, with fuzz tone. He was hammering on. And, of course, people say that he invented hammering on. Of course, he didn't. I think it was Johnny Guitar Watson who actually started it right back in the 50s and stuff. But he popularised it with the fuzz.
Yeah.
And, you know, everyone's freaking out over this sound. What's this sound, you know? And Jimmy Page, of course, was using Fuzz, and he was in the band as well. Eric Clapton, I think by this time had left because he didn't like the pop way that the Yardbirds were going. And, of course, it wasn't long after that that Jimmy Page joined, and then when everybody else left, he called himself the new Yardbirds, which became Led Zeppelin. So this is like a... this band is such a hotbed, and you listen to that sound, it's like, it's very strange. It's coming psychedelic, it's influencing all this other stuff that was going on. You know, Pink Floyd, of course, you know, they were doing a lot of great stuff, but it's all, again, based in this area around the Eel Pie Club, and they actually played there, the Yardbirds. Is this correct?
It is true. I'm a bit stunned as well, because it sounds odd as well. Because, you know, it's like, I think Beck brought that Eastern sort of musical influence as well. You can hear it.
But over like a pretty blues standard bass line. He did the bass line originally. Yeah, it's like a few. And, you know, but obviously his head had gone somewhere else. And, you know. And of course, they were all listening to each other, because the Beatles, you know, with all the Eastern stuff that they were doing, you know, all the Indian and, you know, with the sitars and all this sort of carry on. And I think it was all coming in, and because 1967, it's one of those years, and 66, 67, 68, they were all years that actually really formed the basis of popular music as we know it, you know?
It's crazy, isn't it?
All so, based on the blues.
I'd loved, do you know what I did earlier on? I watched there's a 10-minute video about Eel Pie Island on YouTube. And it's fascinating. And it's a massive, great big hall. You could see the band in the corner. They've got like sketches and of big sort of characters on the wall and stuff. And just loads and loads of people. And actually paying the lady, there was a lady gatekeeping the bridge, you know, getting their 2 pence when they came through and stuff, which I thought, and it was just a fantastic scene, lovely. And with the Yardbirds as well, so they formed from two bands that were playing in the Kingston area, and one of their earliest performances was at the Eel Pie Island Hotel.
Mm-hmm.
And Jim McCarty said, "We got a gig playing with Cyril Davis at Eel Pie Island in the interval." "All right, lads, you can come up when I get off and I have a pint." That's a northern accent. And they didn't have a name or anything. They were just playing 12-bar blues. And when they finished playing, Cyril Davis said, "That was a great set, thank you. What was the name of your band?" And Keith Relf said to him, "It was the Yardbirds. That's the first time he'd heard the name." So there you go. And of course, as you said earlier, when the lineup changed and Jimmy Page fulfilled the group's final contractual obligations under the name the New Yardbirds, as it were.
Mm.
I mean, it was a self-generating grapevine. This is the thing, you know, they didn't used to advertise in the papers.
No.
It was word of mouth and very discreet flyers. So wow. this you're talking about a proper scene there. And Arthur Chisnell, he was a sociologist, and he used to help the teenagers if they needed help. And there wasn't just teenagers. There was like a guy who was living in caves. He was 25. Seriously, loads of like people who hadn't found their way and had dropped out really and didn't know how to get back on the ladder. And there was a college in Harlech, and some of the he would support them, and they worked with a local arts organisation and got some people to go up and study degrees. And so they got them back into education.
Fantastic.
So they were really part of the community, and they were there to help if anybody needed help.
We'll be right back.
there are the days gone by. Aim your head up to the sky, the sky. Your hands in the sky. The days going by. Fight for the nights you had. All the good take from the bad. Sign upon the dotted line. Pay before the time you die. You die. Your head's in the sky. Your head's in the sky. The day is alive. Head's in the sky.
Atomic Rooster, Head in the Sky, from their third studio album, In Hearing of Atomic Rooster, released in August 1971 on the Pegasus, Elektra and Philips record labels. Produced by Vincent Crane and Atomic Rooster, the album reached number 45 in Canada.
And the first album I ever bought.
Yay!
This album is fantastic. the sound is fantastic. It's not just because it's the first album I ever bought. It actually is produced really well. And I can't find out actually who engineered it, but the engineering is great. And that track is all about John Cann, who fell out with Vincent Crane and actually left the band during this album and never toured the States and all that sort of thing. I think he's passed away now. But what a great guitar sound. And his guitar playing, that fantastic, you know, very, very underrated. But when you listen to the development of what had happened, you go back, you know, to the last tracks of the Yardbirds and everything else, and listen how far people had come in just 3 or 4 years.
Yeah.
It is unbelievable. The sound was a lot better. The production, the actual engineering, the quality of recording was a lot better. I love the drum sound on that record. It's just fantastic. And, you know, Vincent Crane, again, you know, sadly dead. I think he committed suicide, actually. A very sad guy. But what an amazing keyboard player. And again, in the great tradition of British Hammond players, you know, with Keith Emerson and all the Rick Wakeman and all these great guys, and Rod Arge and John Lord, of course. All these great British keyboard players that people forget about. Because they talk about the British invasion to the States with guitar. But, you know, the Hammond and the keyboards that were going on, it was a completely different thing. You know, everybody was messing around, farting around using Leslie speakers in the United States, because everything was very quiet and nice, very precise. We wanted it loud. We wanted rock. So John Lord got his... He couldn't have Leslie's because he just weren't loud enough to keep up with the rest of the band. So he had Marshalls. And, you know, I mean, that was the thing. And I think it's the same here. I think that Vincent Crane used Marshall amps, you know. I actually saw Vincent Crane. I saw Atomic
Rooster. Did you?
I did, in Bolton. It was quite sad, really, because there wasn't a lot of people there. But I went to see them, and they did all the original stuff, Black Snake and all those. Oh, it was fantastic. And the biggest thrill, I know we're going to go on to in a minute, was meeting the vocalist.
Peter French.
At... the Great British Rock and Blues Festival. We were playing. We were playing that day, weren't we?
Yeah, we were sort of on... I think we were on late afternoon, and they were headlining that night.
Yeah, and I went to meet him, and it was like when I met Andy Pearl from Wishbone Ash. I just, you know, it's like meeting one of you here. He's such a lovely guy, and he came to see us in London, didn't he, when we played The Half Moon.
Yeah, I love that, though, because I remember we were backstage watching him play, and it was like, Black Snake, ding, and it was just such an amazing time. And then Peter turned up at The Half Moon, Putney, to support us, and... He's such a loving guy, so supportive.
Yeah, and he loved the band. He was saying, "Oh, you're great. I love your riffs." And he was waxing lyrical.
Well,
you know?
We got to say a big thank you to Peter French, because he said to us, if you recall, "Have you played the Ill Pie Club yet?" And I said, "No." And he said, "Well, Gina is a very good friend of mine, and he recommended us to Gina to play." Mm-hmm. So that's why we're playing.
Indeed.
As a word of mouth recommendation. So thank you, Peter, and thank you, Gina. So we've been trying for a couple of years to get the dates to work out. So we're finally going to be playing at the Eel Pie Club in Twickenham on the 5th of October. But also, which is really fantastic as well, we've got Atomic Rooster, who reformed in 2016 with Peter French still on vocals and Steve Bolton on guitar. They're playing at the Eel Pie Club on the 10th of August this year.
Well, it's amazing. And the other thing we share is that one of our keyboard players, we've got quite a few keyboard players now lurking around, but Christian Madden, who now plays with, of course,
Liam Gallagher,
yeah, he played in Atomic Rooster for a bit.
He did indeed.
He did, that's right. So we share that. And also, when we did the Greatest British Rock and Blues Festival, there's a guy called Adrian Goldtree, who he did an amazing job
at
Black Snake, and he had the sound, he was using Marshalls. It was really, really great. He's a great keyboard player. Another one of those British, you know, rock keyboard players like Christian.
Well, it's funny enough, because I remember, because Adrian was showing you around his Hammond, and you were both like heads in the instrument, weren't you? You were like having a look and go, look at this. And of course, Christian Madden's playing with us on our UK tour for the final date.
He is.
So, I get a bit excited because it's just such...
Christian's got a new album coming out, hasn't he, as well?
We shall mention that in the next link, I think.
Okay.
So we're talking about the Eel Pie Club, we're talking about Twickenham and the scene, and it's just an incredible feeling
It is. But I mean, this came, the band originally formed by members of the crazy world of Arthur Brown.
Yes, Arthur.
You know, and Carl Palmer, of course, who went on to be with the ELP.
Yeah, of course.
And Palmer, with Keith Emerson, and this legendary Hammond player, and Moog and all that sort of stuff. But it's... These times will never be repeated because everybody was talking to each other. Everybody was going around looking at each other. Everybody was checking each other out. And yeah, it's a completely different thing now. And, you know, people were learning how to play rock and roll music.
I know. And I miss that, you know. And it's like wherever we go, we always like want musicians to sort of open up, not be frightened, you know, and just to actually open up and have a community. And it's still a bit, it's quite clicky these days. It's not the same.
Unlike, because we had this morning, we had Ugu Danin, our drummer, our new drummer, who lives in Porto, and he came down to record the final three tracks of the album, which is coming out very soon.
Starlight One.
It's available to pre-order now.
Yeah,
if you want to go, starlight-campbell.com, of course. Come and pre-order that. It's available on vinyl and CD, and it will be available as a digital download from Bandcamp. But anyway, we'll talk about it later on. But, you know, he's great. Hugo came down this morning, and he was very funny today because he came down for one session, and we did like the first lot of tracks, and then he came down to finish off today with the three tracks, or yesterday, I should say. And he's very funny, very dry. He's got a great sense of humour, you know.
It's like cool London.
Oh, yeah. It was absolutely fantastic. But he's a great drummer, you know.
Yeah.
Sort of jazz fusion guy and Afrobeat. And he just brings a new dimension to our sound. But anyway, back to the Eel Pie. And we're real looking forward to playing. Look, he's going to be playing there. We're going to be doing it as a trio with Hugo. Well, Ugu, I should say.
Yeah, which is Hugo, but you pronounce it Ugu in Portuguese. But honestly, just get the tickets on sale now. I'm so excited. We were just saying yesterday at dinner time, we're so excited. We want to be there now.
Exactly.
Emily tries, but misunderstands. She's often inclined to borrow somebody's dreams till tomorrow. There is no other day. Let's try it another way. You'll lose your mind and play. Free games for play. See Emily play. Soon after dark, Emily cries. Gazing through trees in sorrow, hardly a sound till tomorrow. Touches the ground. Float on a river forever and ever, Emily.
Yeah. Pink Floyd, See Emily Play, releases her second single in June 1967, that year again, on the Columbia and Tower record labels. It was a non-album single, but appeared as the opening track of the US edition of the band's debut album, The Piper at the Gates of Dawn.
Mm-hmm.
Sid Barrett wrote it, fantastic, such an alternative sound, and when you listen back to the Yardbirds just previously, you know, you could hear it going that way, you know,
yeah,
with the psychedelia, and what a great sound, very unusual instrumentation stuff going on there. Absolutely fantastic record. Of course, you know, Pink Floyd, we don't need to talk about Pink Floyd, but of course Sid Barrett, who passed away and was pretty fucked up with drugs and stuff and what happened, anyway, very sad, but he created some great music.
He did, and it was around 67 that Pink Floyd played three times at the Eel Pie Island Hotel.
Mm.
And promoter Arthur Chisnall got around the licensing laws, you know, because he issued visitors a passport to Eel Pie Island. Isn't it funny how people like...
That's amazing.
Water finds a way, doesn't it? And he faced a big repair bill and lost his license in 1967. And then, in 1970, the venue flourished again, known as Colonel Barefoot's Rock Garden, where attendees could drink Colonel Barefoot Killer Punch and watch, you know, Black Sabbath, Free, and Deep Purple. This is crazy.
It's crazy stuff, isn't it?
And dozens of hippies set up a commune and trashed the hotel next door. Then the place sadly burned down in 1971. Maybe or maybe not for insurance purposes. No one knows. But the site is now a townhouse development called Aquarius, but Eel Pie Island Museum is open in Twickenham. And, of course, the Eel Pie Club, which is at the Patch, Cabbage Patch,
mm-hmm,
in Twickenham, is there. Started at 2000. And we will be playing a concert there on October the 5th.
We certainly will.
So,
yeah,
tickets are on sale now. So if you're around the Twickenham area and you want to feel some history, God, the vibes is going to be so exciting, electric.
And talking of vibes, well, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Our latest...
that wasn't intentional.
Well, there you are. This show now is put out on our Vibes blog. So we've got a podcast and a written blog, which is vibes.starlight-campbell.com. So you go there, you'll see our written and all our works will be on there, yeah, both from a
and
podcast.
Thank you to everyone for subscribing as well. And you can subscribe for free, or if you want to support us in our work, there's a subscription offer as well that you can pay for, which is,
yeah,
fantastic.
And of course the new album is available for pre-order now, so you,
yeah,
get Starlight One. We're very excited about it. We're going to perform in a lot of it at the Eel Pie Club on October the 5th.
I know.
Tickets are also available for the website starlight-campbell.com.
Yeah. And the best thing I was going to say as well is to buy your tickets early. One, because it helps support the venues, and also it helps us know that you're coming.
Yeah, that's right, it is. I know a lot of people sort of put it off until the last minute. It's not good sometimes, but anyway.
No.
It's really cool. So, yeah, that's the end of the show. And we're going to be playing out with, you know, something which is really about, you know, that era and time. And it was earlier on, you know, The Who and My Generation. With the first bass solo, talking about John Entwistle giving it some, I think he was using a Precision at the time, but it's great sound, you know, and that's a real great sound. Anyway.
Yeah, well, let's finish the show with a quote from George Melly about Eel Pie Island. The island had a reputation for sex. When you approached it, you could see sex rising from it like steam from a kettle. It suited us randy young musicians.
See you next week.
Talking about my generation,
just because we get around.
Talking about my generation,
things they do look awful.
Talking about my generation,
I hope I die before I get old.
Talking about my generation,
my generation, just my generation, baby. Why don't you all fade away? Try to dig what we all say. Trying to cause a big sensation. Just talking about my generation.
dig what we all my generation.
This is my generation.
This is my generation, baby. My generation. My generation. People try to put us to death.
Talking about my generation.
Just because we could get around.
Talking about my generation.
Things ain't do.
Talking about my generation.
Hope I die before I get old.
Talking